just 5 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour. Welcome back to the show. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. It is a treat today. We have Jerry Schimmel sitting in studio, the voice of the UNC Bears. He was the longtime play-by-play voice for the Rockies on the Rockies radio broadcast. You heard him, NBA career, but the Nuggets specifically talking about some of that. I specifically remember listening to you on the Nuggets game. I'm one of those kind of diehard Nuggets guys.
Are you? You know, good.
I was a Broncos diehard for a while, and something clicked in high school, and I just got obsessed with the Nuggets. I must like being hurt because that was what that's what happened all the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll never forget my brother. I'm a diehard sports fan because my dad and my brother.
Uh-huh.
And they were huge into it. My brother would wear all the jerseys and we'd talk sports, the Denver Post. We'd always have them all over the place and read them. We'd go to Broncos games. And for us, that was like a, you know, 9 hour round trip.
Yeah.
Plus, we're there all day. That was in lieu of a vacation. We would go to Broncos games.
Right.
I'll never forget whenever the Broncos would lose or the Nuggets would lose. And I was pretty down. I would be pretty sad.
Hmm.
My brother would just look at me in those like very sweet eyes and be like, "It'll be okay." Because he used to be that way when he was younger.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think me being his, I'm 11 years younger than him, yeah. Me being his little brother, he would look at me and go, "Okay, he's taking it really hard. I gotta step up here."
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah that's how I got it.
I understand that. I appreciate that. I grew up in South Dakota, big Minnesota Twins fans. We were about 3 hours from the Twin Cities. I remember when they got beat, Brady, I'd be crying. I mean, 7, 8 years old, they'd lose, and I'd cry.
My mom's not proud of me to admit this on the air, but we had this thing called Blue Mondays when the Broncos would lose.
Hmm.
I would suddenly get this very bad stomach ache on Sunday night. I couldn't make it to school.
Oh, shoot.
So I wouldn't go to school Monday.
Poor Brady.
When they would lose.
Wow.
I was that much of a diehard that my friends would be like, they would give me crap.
Yeah.
Broncos lost to the Raiders. Oh, this is an interesting one. Broncos lost to the Raiders one time. No, many times, I guess. And I didn't go to school the next day. Apparently, my head football coach and the football team decorated my entire locker with Raiders gear.
Ooh.
So I'm glad I missed out on that.
Ooh.
And one of my good friends took it down for me. You're like, and I wasn't like a hater of other teams. I'm not like right. Michael. I'm not that crazy. I just didn't go to school and faked sick whenever the Broncos would lose. So yeah, it was sports is an amazing thing, and it does help you get away from things,
sure.
Too, and I think that obviously it was tough to get away from things in the sports world the last couple of years, but at the end of the day, it's when you listen to you and you broadcast a game, it takes people away.
Yeah,
and I think that's such a I don't know if you want to call it a responsibility, but it feels like it is, and I think that you handled that to me better than most.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I always looked at it that way too. It's like this is an outlet for people, so let's be that outlet for them. I think more so in baseball than basketball. Baseball is one of those sports on the radio that's meant for that radio audience.
It's so meant for the radio.
You can do housework, you can do lawn work, you can be in the garage, you could be in the car, anywhere, and you can enjoy a baseball game. So I always I took that responsibility very seriously.
Jerry, I don't want to throw a curveball. Speaking of baseball, we had some questions on this.
Sure.
And I know the answer to this because I know how the radio world works, and as ridiculous as it is, but whenever I tell people that Jerry Schimmel is not broadcasting Rockies games anymore, why would Jerry just get tired of it, or what's going on there? And I don't know how much you want to get into that, but that's what we call was iHeart, right? They come in every year and they trim budgets.
Yeah.
They don't look at the person, they don't look at how good the person has done. They just they look at the numbers on the spreadsheet, and that's what they do. Am I right there?
You're exactly right. Yeah, and so 2019, so 2 years ago, I got caught up in that. They were in bankruptcy, iHeart Media was, and they decided they're going to cut some jobs. And one day, they cut 955 jobs across the country, 16 in Denver, and I was one of those 16. So I remember I was literally, Brady, packing for spring training, and I got a call from the program director, and he said, "Hey, did you hear about all the iHeart cuts today?" And I said, "No, I didn't hear any of that. What's going on?" He says, "Well, you're one of them."
Oh, wow. That's how you were told.
1 minute conversation. And they're like, "Okay, our lawyer's going to call you and you work out a little severance package," and hang up the phone. So that was it. But he had 15 other people do the same thing with it during that day. He had a mandate to do it. It had to be done that day. So I get that. I got caught up in that, and that's why I'm not doing the team anymore.
It's a cutthroat industry. I'm very thankful. You know, we're a locally owned radio station up here. And, it doesn't mean people don't lose jobs in a small radio station. It happens. But it does, as far as as far as that goes, you try not to have a 4-second conversation if that's going to happen forward.
Yeah, sometimes you can't avoid that, and I get that. I have never had any ill will. I really have not. I was in the radio business for so long. I get it. I get people lose their jobs, not because they're not good on the air, but because of other circumstances, most of it financial.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me. And I've never and at times it's crept into my thought like, you should really be mad at these guys. And it's never that way. And for me, that too, Brady, was a personal thing. I just believe God is in control of my life and he's got a plan for it. And that including me, that included my losing my job 2 years ago.
Well, and selfishly, I know we're pretty pumped to have you here as a part of the AFKA family, so it kind of worked out there. A couple of texter. He shows and doesn't tell. He puts you in the game. That's what you do.
That's a nice compliment.
And then Noob, of course. So what are Jerry's rankings for the mascots for the four major teams in Colorado? Dinger should be number two. He gets way too much hate. These are the well-thought-out texts that we get, Jerry.
Probably won't comment on that one. But
you don't have your favorite? You don't have number one?
Rocky with the Nuggets.
Rocky's the best mascot perhaps in all of sports.
I agree with that. And my wife has said that from day one. I started with the Nuggets many, many years ago. So, man, that is the best. He's entertaining. He's funny. He's talented.
He can make the half-court back. He's
a former college gymnast. People don't realize that. A very good athlete. So, you know, tall, but short and stocky and strong, and still is. I think he's close to 50 years old now. So
wow.
Yeah.
Plus, he has a lightning bolt tail, too.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of the suit.
How do you go wrong with a lightning bolt tail?
You don't.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'll see him this Friday night.
Are you going for sure?
I will be going.
Oh, you're going to take pictures?
Sure.
All right.
Gladly.
You're going to do a write-up?
Maybe.
I like to plan out stuff that we do, like business-wise, on the air.
This was just a pleasure trip, but yeah, I'll write a paper for it.
No, I'll be Angel, I don't want you drinking. What is that, a beer in your hand? I don't think so. Well, you can do that. That's fine. But the story might be better that way, actually, because
that's what I did for the Jokic story.
Yeah.
I had a couple Bud Lights that night.
Then you get to tell the real story.
Yes, it always turns out better with Bud Light.
I can't even read half of it. None of them are negative about Jerry Schimmel. They're more or less just taking me to a weird world. Jerry, I want to get into this story with you. Obviously, this is my wife and I actually watched the ESPN story. It was in 1997, I believe. The late Stuart Scott started it. And then the piece on you was about the plane crash.
Yep.
And a lot of people, I mean, you're extremely famous as far as the state of Colorado and your broadcast career. This plane crash in 1989 over at Sioux City, Iowa, it was one of those just crazy stories. And you know, you talked to me several times and said, hey, I'm very comfortable talking about it. You were a survivor of that plane crash to Airlines Flight 232. There's so much that goes into that story. But can you kind of take us through that? Your position, you had mentioned, because that was before you were into the broadcasting career.
Yeah. Yeah, before at the professional level anyway. I'd been doing high school and college stuff. But now it's 1989, like you said, July 19, and I was actually working in Denver then for the Continental Basketball Association. I was in their front office. I was deputy commissioner, legal counsel, and we were traveling that day, we being myself and the commissioner, from Denver to Chicago, going to make a connection in Chicago and go on to Columbus, Ohio. Next day in Columbus was the CBA's college draft. We're going to draft our players the next day. And we took off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for Chicago. Perfect conditions, Brady. 83 degrees, no wind, no expected turbulence. Got about halfway there, 59 minutes into the flight, and we blew an engine. The number two engine in a DC-10 is the tail engine. And the first thing I thought was a bomb had gone off. It was that sort of sound, and then the feel. You could hear it behind you, and then it kind of reverberated through the cabin, and I thought, and we started to drop, and I thought, man, a bomb has gone off. A terrorist had planted a bomb. It's been detonated. We started to drop. Panic took over the cabin, and I thought, that's it for everybody. And about 30 seconds later, seemed a lot longer at the time, but 30 seconds after that explosion, we came out of that drop again and eventually leveled off. But we were in serious trouble. The explosion was a defect, actually, in the core of metal that holds the fan blades together, and it disintegrated that engine, blew out the back of the airplane, and severed the entire hydraulic system. Now, you growing up on a farm understand hydraulics, and when you have something that uses hydraulics and they're gone, you're not supposed to be able to operate it. it. But somehow they kept the plane in the air, and we tried a crash landing in Sioux City, and we just had I shouldn't say we had nothing to do with it. I'm at the back praying like everybody else. But the cockpit crew had just so little control of the plane. We're supposed to land at about 120 miles an hour, normal DC-10 landing. We hit at 255. They couldn't slow the plane down enough to have any shot at a safe landing. And we hit the ground that hard and slid a little ways, flipped over, and broke into all these pieces. And that's the videotape that you can pick up online with an easy search for United Flight 232. And the result was that there were 296 people aboard, 112 died, so 286 of us, or 186 of us, were able to survive.
What was the time frame from when you heard that, like you said, it sounded like a bomb went off when the engine blew and everything was happening? From that point, how long from that point to the landing? Do you know?
45 minutes.
45 minutes.
Yeah, a long time.
So
yeah.
You're in the plane and you're all pretty much, I mean, everybody on the plane is like, This is it.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah.
So what's going through? You, like, what are you doing at this state? Are you talking to people, or do we sit and be quiet? I mean, what is it? Sheer panic? What was it like in there?
Yeah, you know, when we first dropped after the engine explosion, it was total panic. I mean, it panicked to go over the cabin. But once we came out of that drop and leveled off, it subsided pretty quickly. And I called after that a controlled panic. You could still hear people crying, and some people would cry out every once in a while. But for the most part, people kept pretty calm. A lot of families with kids on board, middle of summertime, so people on vacation. And the rest of us were businessmen traveling, so we kind of kept to ourselves. But in that 45 minutes, we kept circling the airport. Every time we got the plane wouldn't go straight, and it wouldn't go left. It kept banking to the right on its own. They kept fighting this right turn. And so every time we got in a heading for Sioux City, the plane would veer off course, and we have to come back and line up again. We did that five times. And that's why it took us so long to get there. It took us 45 minutes to get there. And in that time, we were able to practice. This sounds kind of crazy, too, but we practiced the emergency landing position and procedure. So twice. We went through it twice. And so by the time we came around for final approach, and Captain Haynes told us to brace, we knew what that meant. That meant you grab the seat back in front of you, cross your arms, stick your forehead in the seat back, and try to secure yourself as best you can. So we were ready for that. I think we were probably, this sounds crazy too for a plane crash, but we were probably as mentally and physically ready as we could be for that crash.
That's stuff you just don't think about. When you hear plane crash, you think, oh, something bad happened, crash.
Yeah.
Not thinking of taking turns around the airport and the pilot, the captain talking to you and going through, hey, this is what's happening at this stage, and almost, as you said, almost practicing the impact.
That's why our crash was so different, so unique, and I think so many people remember it. I think the biggest thing is it was videotaped, and so people have that videotape they can reference still, but ours is different. You're right. Most of the time, there's something happens, immediately there's chaos, there's a crash. In our case, it strung out for 45 minutes.
When you were at that point, and again, if you watched the video, and I just recently watched it again. When you watch the video, do you look at that and say, how in the world did I come out of that
thing? Every single time. Every single time I see it, to me, it's a miracle. It's a videotape that's a miracle. And I know that's tough for the 112 people who died, and I get that. But 184 of us survived. And when you see that videotape, you're thinking to yourself, at least I have, and I've seen it a couple hundred times, Brady, I say the same thing. There is no way anybody could come out of that thing alive. And almost two-thirds of us in the plane did, and a lot of us without any serious injuries like myself. So, miracle to me.
So, Jerry, on that side of it, Jay Ramsdale, was he your boss at the time? And you were, of course, friends with him.
Great friends.
And I know that was a tough one, too, because you were, I don't want to say a state of panic, but you were certainly, hey, I got to find him before I even think about making any kind of phone calls. And I know that was a tough journey.
Yeah, it was. You know, I had a pretty good idea that Jay wasn't a survivor of that crash. He was sitting behind me by seven rows, despite what the media said afterward. We weren't sitting next to each other. And I know that I knew later on, a little bit later on, that where the plane broke was about where he was sitting, and it caught fire back there. And I had a pretty good idea that Jay didn't survive that. But, you know, you hold on to hope that maybe, I just haven't found him or something. But that was a tough one for me that afternoon, that evening, going from hospital to hospital. I went to the morgue at the airport to try to find his body. Never did see him. But, yeah, they confirmed his death 4 days later. So he burnt very badly.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, just devastating on that side of it. So, Jerry, when you And again, so sorry for the all of those. A friend, of course. But Jerry, in that situation, you're getting out of when you did get out of the plane. You're out of the plane, and this thing could explode, right? I mean, it's already on fire in so many different ways. I mean, this thing could really explode. But you heard something before you fully made your full-on escape.
Yeah, I got outside the plane, and I was probably in there, Brady, initially maybe 3 minutes. I mean, the smoke just chased us out, and somehow I found an opening. I saw, because we were filled up with smoke so quickly, I saw daylight, and I saw people moving through this hole to the outside, and I finally got to that spot, and incredibly, where the plane had broke off in the back, you could step right into a cornfield. I mean, you didn't have to step down, you have to step up. Somehow we just came even. The floor of the ceiling, because we're upside down, was even level with the cornfield dirt. So I could just walk right out of this thing. So I finally get back there and I walk out and I'm thinking, man, this thing might explode. And I heard a baby crying back inside the wreckage. And I struggle with this over the years because people say this is so heroic, and I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm not trying to be overly humble about this, but I never saw it as heroic, and I'll tell you why. I got outside the plane, Brady, and I heard a baby crying back inside the wreckage, and I didn't think it through. I didn't weigh any of the risks. I didn't think if I go back in the plane, it might explode or I might not find my way back out again. I heard a baby crying, and the next thing I know, I'm back inside the smoke, over top the crying. And it turns out, crazy story, there was a baby 11 months old, so not even a year old, sitting in row 11 originally on the floor between her mom's feet, thrown to the back of the plane into row 28 or 29, into an overhead bin that closed and locked on her. And we're upside down, so she's inside an overhead bin, and we're upside down. So it's below me rather than above me, and it was intact. I found the latch, lifted the lid up, and just scooped her out and got outside the plane the second time.
I think about that, like with all the the smoke, that scene. Yeah. And it's, you don't want to downplay it, but at the same time, you go back in there and try to stay oriented somehow, try to stay level-headed, and to hear this baby. I mean, to me, I was watching this again, just to hearing the story again from you here. It's goosebumps on that side of it, you know? And
yeah, the only thing I can tell you was, I don't remember much about, I just remember hearing the crying, and I remember telling myself, "Oh, keep crying. Come on, just keep crying, so I can hear you and get over the top of the crying." And so she did that. She just kept crying, and then almost crazy. As soon as I touched her, as soon as I grabbed her, she stopped crying.
So you carried her.
Yeah, I just carried her.
Carried her out.
I lifted her out with one arm. I mean, I couldn't see anything. That we were full of smoke, so I just kind of feeling around. Grabbed her with one arm, and as soon as I grabbed her, she stopped crying. And then I found my way back out. Kind of felt my way along this wall and then found that sunlight again.
So you get out. Her parents, there was kind of a full family, right? They had a couple of kiddos.
Whole family survived.
They all survived.
Yep.
And were they out? Like, where were they at this point when you, and again, I don't know how long it took everybody to kind of come together from as far as the survivors. What was that next process like?
Yeah, well, first of all, with this family, this is crazy too. The family's in the front. They're right behind first class. Three kids, two boys, and the Sabrina that I grabbed, and parents, so all five. The four of them remain in their seats, and Sabrina is thrown to the back of the plane, like I said. Well, the plane breaks into pieces. We go one way, they go another. We're 200 yards apart. Sabrina's 200 yards apart from the rest of her family.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy. So I never saw them. I never saw that family at all, ever, until a couple months later.
That's insane. Yeah. Well, Jerry, we'll keep talking about this. Man, I really appreciate you talking about this story. I'm sure people have said it's like a movie. I mean, it just kind of feels like a movie when you think about all of that. And I know when you talk about the 112 people that died, it's hard to say things like that because at the end of the day, it was a terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
Like you said, there were some moments there that when people look at it, and I think these are hopeful moments when they hear that story that we were having texts coming in, when they hear that story and all this stuff going on with everybody fighting and stuff, and they hear at the end of the day, a man gets out of a plane that could explode at any minute. You barely survived, and you hear a baby cry, and your just instincts kick in to crawl back in there, get this baby out of a latch. And I think that those kind of stories need to be out there more and more because it doesn't matter on the political side of things. It doesn't matter what's going on with different things out there. When it comes to that moment, none of it mattered.
It gives you perspective.
Yeah.
It really does. And every time I get caught up in the world we're living in with politics and all that, I think back to that plane crash, and it just gives me the proper perspective to keep things in balance.
Yeah, no question about it. 25 minutes after the hour, Jerry Schimmel joining us. It's just been a complete treat to have you in the studio, my friend. But I hear we're going out to lunch after this, too.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, that sounds fantastic.
Right.
I'm starving at
and,
this time.
And Angel's paying.
He's That's what
going.
I heard.
He's not even going, and he's paying.
He's paying. He's writing us an IOU. Those things are worth more anyway.
Awesome.
We'll be right back. It's The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy.
Northern Colorado's voice and the leader in prep sports is 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Katie Wingy, your host, reporter, and analyst for the Denver Nuggets, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Just 30 minutes after the hour, welcome back to The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy. Jerry Schimmel is joining us in studio, the voice of the UNC Bears, the host of Amazing Americans. And for the last 30 minutes or so, you know, and I know that doesn't do it justice at all, but we've been talking about the plane crash on July 19th, 1989, in Sioux City, Iowa. Flight 232, Jerry was one of the survivors. Unfortunately, 112 people died or perished in that plane crash, but the little baby did not, and her family did not. And you were telling me a story during the break, Jerry, that you ran out, you delivered, you were trying to help people. It was blowing your mind, and you hand the baby off to a woman. You're saying, "Okay, can you take her? I want to go help some people." You don't, at the moment, you didn't even really recall going in and rescuing this baby.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think there was so much chaos, so much going on, Brady, and just you're trying to react to everything that some of that stuff just gets away from you. But, yeah, you're right. I got away from the plane with the baby in my arms. You know what was really funny? I didn't tell you this part, but I got what I thought was a safe distance away, and I started thinking about that kid, and I was like, I hope she's okay because she stopped crying. You know, is she even alive? So I forgot about the potential explosion, which it never did. It kind of burnt to a black shell, but I held the baby out in front of me, and I looked at her, and she was fine, and I noticed that she had lost her diaper. So in my head, I'm going, man, I hope she doesn't get real excited here because she doesn't have a diaper on. It's like, why are you thinking about that in this circumstance? The practical things
looking
come to mind.
Looking for diapers at
yes,
that
exactly.
Point.
Yeah,
wow.
So you lost your diaper. So I kept going, hand the baby off, came to a group of people who were kind of assembled that came out in front of me. Many of them were hurt very seriously. I mean, some really gruesome injuries I could see, and I wanted to see if I could help. I don't know what I could do, but I saw this woman who had come out in front of me, and I knew that she was okay because I helped her out the back of the plane. And I said, "Hey, would you please take this baby? I don't know who she is or where family is." And she said, "Sure." And you know what she said too? This is funny. This woman is still a friend of mine. She just, her birthday was yesterday, so I texted her again. But she said, "Well, where's the baby's diaper bag?" And I'm like, "Diaper bag? Oh my gosh, she's asking me."
Didn't think to do that.
Yeah, so I was like, well, hold on. Let me run back the plane, see if I can find it. No. So I said, she said, "Oh, don't worry about the diaper bag." He's like, "You sure?" You know, no. So I handed the baby off this woman, and I started helping these other people. And this one guy had a really bad gash on his forehead. Mm-hmm. And I was wearing a suit and a tie. I took my jacket off and put it behind his head and kind of wiped some blood away on his forehead with my jacket. And he's like, I said, "How you doing?" He goes, "I'm perfect. Just leave me right here." And so that's the kind of stuff that was happening. And I completely forgot about Sabrina, about that baby that I had grabbed. I mean, until that night when I saw her on TV in her dad's lap being interviewed on a show on ABC, I think. I'd forgotten that I'd even gone back in the plane and gotten her.
Did you stay in contact with the family after? When did they realize, of course, that, hey, Jerry was the one who got this 11-month-old out of the plane? And, yeah, did you stay in contact years after?
Yeah, I did. I think it was probably a couple of weeks before we actually made contact. I never saw the family. Like I told you earlier, they were away from us in a different part of the cornfield. Never saw the family. And then we rendezvoused some. I don't know if they contacted me or vice versa. And then we became friends. You know, the parents were about my wife and I's age, and we became good friends. And they had two boys on the plane as well. They were the older kids. And so we became pretty close after that.
And you know, we had talked about this. I had asked you before we started the show what happened to Sabrina, how you know, and with her life going after this.
Yeah, I wish we could write a better script for the ending of that, Brady. But she passed away 2007. She was a 20-year-old sophomore at Arizona State. They lived in Phoenix, and she died of a drug overdose. We still don't know if it was accidental or suicidal. We think it's accidental because there was no note, there was no premonition or anything. But yeah, it was. I was in contact with Sabrina a lot, just via email. You know, every month or so we would send, and then I stopped getting emails from her, cards, and the, you know, and then I finally called her parents one day and I said, yeah, I've heard from Sabrina. It's like, well, she passed away about 3 months ago of a drug overdose, and so that was a tough one.
They,
at spring training when I was doing the Rockies, so I was doing those for 10 years. My wife and I go out and visit her gravesite in Mesa, Arizona. So I still do that when I get to Phoenix.
Oh, such a tough, as you said, a very tough ending. And you're hoping. I mean, for a long time, it did seem like it was this was an extremely positive thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, life happens. And you know, some people would probably, well, did the plane, did that, when you're 11 months old? I mean, she probably didn't. Other than what people told her, there's no way that's really registering.
It's hard to say. It really is. My gut tells me that was not the factor.
Something else.
It was something else. You know, who knows? And I'm not afraid to tell that story because, you know, I try to tell teenagers, please just don't go the drug route.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It just leads to bad stuff, including death. And that's what happened to a great friend of mine.
We're talking to Jerry Schimmel. A lot of sports stories in the first hour. Talking about the plane crash. United Airlines Flight 232 crashed in Sioux City, Iowa on July 19th, 1989. What I think is fascinating to me, Jerry, is flying was never an issue after the fact.
Yeah.
In fact, the next day, you got on an airplane.
That sounds really courageous, doesn't it? It really wasn't that courageous.
I mean, I'm scared of planes anyway. And then you do this, and you get on, and it's but you thought that was important.
Yeah, I tell
to just
people,
get out and do it.
I tell people that and they say, "Well, I could never do that." You know, it was so crazy that day and that night. And United contacted me late the night of the crash and said, hey, we're bringing a plane in tomorrow to Sioux City, and we're going to go back to Denver. So if you want to go, if you want to get in that plane, show up at the airport at whatever time and just get on the plane, tell them who you are. And I thought, yeah, I want to get back. I've done all I can here. I want to get back and see my wife. And so I thought it was important to get back on a plane again anyway, because I was in this business where I had to travel a lot. And it sounds courageous that I did this, but here's how it turned out, Brady. It's kind of funny. First of all, I remember walking past this group of literally hundreds of media people, and they were lined up, and the satellite trucks were all there, and all these people were looking for somebody to interview, and I walked past everybody, and nobody had any idea it was a survivor from that plane crash. And my brother was with me, my older brother, who had driven up from Topeka, Kansas, and we kind of walked in together, and we were just laughing, like, all these people have no idea who you are. And so I got on that plane, and I found a seat, buckled my seatbelt, Brady, and the next thing I remember, we're landing in Denver. I hadn't slept all night. I was up all night long looking for Jay, and no sleep. And so I fell asleep, and our wheels touched the ground in Denver, I woke up. So like I wrote in a book, my book that I wrote, it was, I got bucked off the horse, got back in the saddle, and fell asleep for 2 hours.
But you got back in the saddle.
Yeah.
What was that like when you wake up and you're landed at this point, so you're safe? I mean, was that surreal? What were those emotions like? Do you even remember those emotions?
I do. I remember that moment distinctly. It was like, wow, I slept that whole flight. I must have been pretty tired. That was my first thought. And secondly, it was, maybe that's the best way it could have gone. Then I had to think about it. I wouldn't have that anxiety. And then I started thinking about seeing my wife again, and I knew she would meet me at the gate, and so it was all cool.
And that was probably just heaven,
I mean, being
able to see your wife at that point.
Get back in Denver and seeing her and some friends.
Wow. Really, like you said, it does put things into perspective. 38 minutes after the hour, we still have Jerry here with us hanging out, and I want to kind of finish up, you know, how you coped going forward, because there is that, you know, is there that thing, the survivor's guilt and all that going into it? So we'll kind of wrap up this discussion. But first, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Krista Mateo, your UNC women's basketball coach, and you are listening to The Whole Show, 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back. It's the whole show. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios talking to Jerry Schimmel. And Jerry is, you know, normally this show we do guests, so we get them on for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or sometimes even an hour. But when you said you were willing to come on the show and just kind of talk about your memories of Denver sports programs and players and coaches, and of course open up about which you've done before, but talk more about the plane crash. It's like, no, we're going to do 2 hours here. And 2 hours feels like you've been on for about 5 minutes.
Well, you guys are desperate for content, so I agreed to do 2 hours.
People get tired of my knock-knock jokes, apparently. So you got to change it. You got to flip the script once in a while. When the hooligans start getting rowdy, you got to do something different.
I'm here to help you.
Susan and Cheryl approved, by the way.
Susan and Cheryl, okay.
Jerry, talk to me about this side of it. Any survivor guilt.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, you wanted to get on that plane the very next day and for many reasons, mainly probably to see your wife.
Yeah.
But for many reasons, you got back on. Did things hit you as opposed, you know, the why me and, oh my gosh, this terrible thing just occurred in front of me? Even if you weren't on that plane and you were somebody that just came up on this accident and witnessed all of, you know, what was going on,
yeah.
It could be devastating. Was there survivor's guilt for you?
Yeah, there was. There was a lot of that. And I think the biggest result or the biggest reason for that, Brady, was there's a little boy sitting in front of me that died in the crash. Mm-hmm. So he was sitting in his mom's lap in the seat right in front of me. I mean, like where you are in front of me right now,
yeah.
Looking over the seat back, playing peekaboo, and it was just messing around.
Gosh.
And one moment, next moment, we hit, and he gets thrown over here, and I see him, and he's dead. So that really got me, the survivor's guilt, because I kept thinking about that kid. Man, he was 18 months old, had his whole life in front of him, and it's taken away, and I'm 2.5 feet behind him, and I survived this thing without any serious injuries. A lot of nightmares about that, a lot of dreams about him. Still have some of those today. But yeah, survivor's guilt is real. I remember being urged to go to a trauma counselor. I did that a couple weeks after the crash, and this guy threw this term out, post-trauma stress disorder. It's like, what? What are you talking? I'd never heard that term before. Well, nobody had probably back in 89. And I was like, say that again? Should I write that down? I'd never heard that before. And he's like, yeah, survivor's guilt, anger, depression, all this stuff is going to hit you. And it did, just like he said it would.
Wow. No, and you're just thinking about the, you know, children, as far as that goes. I know that can just be, when you think of kids anyway.
Yeah.
But to see that, Jerry, my goodness. How did you do it? I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, you're seeking some help, but I know you're a man of faith.
Yeah.
And I know you've also used your gift of speaking to really talk to people and help people and build people up. I know that those have been important things for you.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons I try to justify in my mind the crash, Brady, that I can take that experience and tell the story and maybe have a positive influence on somebody as a result. So I think all of us who survived that crash grab onto that, like, okay, why did this happen? Okay, let me take this story and maybe have an impact on somebody in a positive way. If it whatever it might be, it might be a little thing. It might be saving someone's life from drug. I don't know what that is, but I got to use this story for the rest of my life to try to influence somebody in a positive way. And that's what I've tried to do every day of my life. And that's why I'm here talking to you. I mean, I want to share this story. Maybe a listener can see, all right, hey, I had my own plane crash, but if Jerry can get back up and move forward, maybe I can do the same thing.
Hey, a texter here. I'm okay if I don't win Top Text Tuesday. I could listen to Jerry all day long.
Oh,
so, I mean, there's the prize for Top Text Tuesday. 47 minutes after.
How much of a prize?
47 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a short break. We'll wrap this thing up on the other side. Folks, we're going to have this available via podcast. Right, Angel? You got that. You're good at that. It'll be available via podcast as soon as we're done here. We'll be right back.
Want sports from the coach? Tune in to Clark and the Coach, weekdays at 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Christopher Dempsey, your Nuggets insider from Altitude Sports, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Mm-hmm. 52 minutes after the hour. A little groovy there, Angel. We'll fix that at some point. No, that's okay. That's all right. I'll allow it. I can allow it.
This is Cole's playlist, okay?
Is it really?
Yes.
Well, Cole, I let Cole get away with murder, too,
sometimes.
He's got,
sometimes. Like, 646 songs on here.
Yeah. And then he plays a lot of AC/DC, which I really like.
Oh,
you're not an AC/DC. God, yeah. See, Jerry and I, we were bonding, and we're breaking apart.
You had me, and then you lost me.
What about Metallica?
Everybody had...
So if it's like, you just don't want the, you don't like the loud...
No.
No. What would it take to get you to go to a rock concert with me one time? What if it's like, you know, semi, like not heavy, heavy metal?
Probably five-figure check.
Okay. Well, we could talk to George. We could talk to George Carl.
George, yeah.
Would he go to a heavy metal concert?
No.
What kind of music is he
playing? He likes country music.
George is a country music guy.
Yeah.
Need him on the show.
Yeah, yeah, we do, don't we?
Well, that's what we, you know, we're trying to, you know, Jerry. I told Jerry, I said, I never want to abuse relationships. I never want to get, you know, guys on like Dylan McCaffrey and ask about Christian or, you know, get Jerry on. But I do would like to know if we could get George to a barbecue on Saturday. is that too soon to?
Maybe.
I mean,
that might be a little forward.
He's got about 30 things for him to sign.
We could always Thanksgiving next month.
Yeah, that would be fun. We could get that done in like 3 hours. It wouldn't be that big a deal. Jerry, this has been an absolute treat, man. And again, the sports side's fun. You know, we can get into that all day long. But the stories that you're talking about and just going into, because I've always knew about you surviving the crash. And I've heard snippets on ESPN. I think they did. It was like a 7 or 8 minute story, and it was powerful. And that's how ESPN operates. And they can get you in those 7 minutes. But man, for you to open up and just elaborate here on the show with us has been fantastic for us.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. You know, and we love hearing you. I love hearing Amazing Americans. And that show, I'm guessing, and I know we don't have that much longer here, but is that inspired from the plane crash?
It is. Yeah. It is. And it goes back to what you said earlier. You get perspective on things like plane crashes, and then you want to tell people stories, the positive stuff, because all we hear about is negative.
Yeah.
I mean, all I'm hearing about today driving up here is that the Broncos coach should be fired, and John Gruden, and all this negative stuff. There's so many positive stories out there in sports that I think it's my job to try to bring some of those out. So I've really been blessed by Amazing Americans.
And I'm telling you, the stories that you have on, you had George Carl on not too long ago, but the athletes, the coaches, the sports figures that have had the issues themselves or their parents or something like that. I mean, I heard the Columbus interview not too long ago. Just amazing stuff.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been, like I said, a blessing. Really fun to have these people tell their stories and have an impact on somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we had an assistant general manager had an alcohol problem, told his story, and 7 people went into rehab after that, after hearing it.
I mean, that's all you can ask for, right? We carry Amazing Americans on the weekends here on KFKA, and it's an absolute honor to have it. Jerry, appreciate you, man. Where are we going for lunch, man? Steak?
Your call.
Steak?
Yeah, something expensive since Angel's buying.
All right. Good night, Northern Colorado.